Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Oh, here we are again.
Once again, here we are, you might say.
Interesting. Are we here? Again once?
Hey. Here are we.
I feel like I'm a Captain Kirk and I just broke the android.
Yeah, I was going
error.
I was thinking to go boldly versus boldly going.
Yes.
There's a lot of English questions on today's podcast.
Yeah, that's true. Well, this episode will now be in Spanish. Nope, I can't actually.
Hola!
I can't do that. Yeah, exactly right. Hola, freakies. So, hey, there was an Apple event yesterday. Did you know? Did you hear? Did you notice? Were you aware?
You know, I slept through most of it.
Good.
It's true.
That's fine. It's late. That's an afternoon nap for you. Well, interesting.
Yeah, well, you know, I got to recharge somewhere. Because there's only one port for doing that now. I don't know where I was going with that.
We've removed the charging port. You'll need a new iPhone every time you run out of battery.
Disposable iPhones. Yeah. Burner iPhones. Burner. That's exactly what you want.
Sure. So no Mac or iPad stuff, really. Unless you count iWork.
Well, and the not even meriting a press release iPad storage changes.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that was the nail in the coffin of we're going to get, for the people who are really holding out hope, there will be iPad updates this fall. It's like, nope. They just changed the prices and storage on models for the holidays, and that's it. That's it. Done.
I say that's fine. I mean, I
agree.
The iPad doesn't need to be updated every year, I think, is what they're realizing. I mean, even with the phone, I think, you know, they love that you know, their Bezos chart with the like, oh, look how much better performance is than it used to be. But, you know, I think part of that is they've showed with this whole I really am intrigued by the multi-core thing in the iPhone 7. And I think what they're pointing out is also like, we basically got more performance than we know what to do with. Mm. These devices are so powerful now that a lot of what we do, unless you're sort of pushing the envelope with games, for example, or really graphically intensive software, you know, we can shuffle that off into a low power processor and it'll do just fine. You will not notice the difference because that is not the bottleneck.
Think about the classic phone concept of standby, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, this is like standby. Your processor still has to run.
Sure.
But you want that to be as efficient as possible because it's only when it really cranks up that you need, that you want that power or need that power. And so it's smart to say, you know, we've got this other bank of cores that works when you just need to do a little bit of work. And I think that's really smart. I think battery life is incredibly important.
Sure.
I know that the iPad doesn't need new versions every year, but when I look at something like the A10 Fusion. It's like, it's turning into like a Mountain Dew flavor now. It's a little bit much.
James Thompson, who is our special guest on The Rebound this week, said, did somebody from a razor company come to work at Apple?
Well, yeah. Well, okay, I'm going to go with Mountain Dew. That's going to be my line.
Works. A10 Extreme.
Yeah, I can't wait for the A10 code red in the new iPad Pro. But I have to say, when you're talking about the iPad, the idea that this A10 Fusion processor exists, and so that when the A10X code red comes out in the spring, that'll be good for iPad battery life too, because you'll have more processor and GPU, but you'll also have more battery efficiency. And I think that would be a good thing for something like an iPad to have too. And it'll be interesting to see what the iPad Pro upgrade cycle is like, right? Because will they bother, or will they do some other iPad model, or will they do nothing? It's unclear to me what they'll do, because we've only ever had these first iterations of the iPad Pro, with last fall the 12.9 and the 9.7 coming out in this spring. So it'll be interesting to see if they do an update there. But with the A10 Fusion sitting there bubbling away, you know, I gotta wonder how does that technology apply to the iPad line?
Let me ask you this:
mm-hmm.
If an iPad, so a new iPad comes out next year, does it have a headphone jack?
Sigh.
I'm just curious I think it does because I think that they're not as pressed for space.
That's true.
I think that's a big part of it, and I think that, I mean, I don't know, they could get rid of it if they wanted, like, sort of unify the lines, but I don't think they're going to get rid of it on the Macs anytime soon.
You know what?
Maybe the MacBook. Maybe.
Yeah. I think on the MacBook, if they replaced it with a second USB-C port,
no one would complain.
I think probably people would be like, that's cool. Good.
Do you think they put a lightning port on it? If they're selling lightning headphones now, right? So that's the other question, right? Like, what do you do with that?
Well, I had that question. We were talking yesterday at the event. I was talking to a bunch of people, and the question kept coming up about, like, will Lightning be on the Mac? Because right now, Apple's kept Lightning separate, but there are lots of reasons why you might want Lightning on the Mac, including plugging those headphones in. At the same time, they seem, although again, it's only one system right now, but they seem to be committed to USB-C or Thunderbolt 3 via USB-C, something like that, as a connector. And that connector and the Lightning connector are so similar I have a hard time figuring out how they make those things feel not confusing if they're sharing space on a computer. And so I don't know. I don't know what they do there, because USB-C has sort of been my assumption. But then I try to picture a MacBook that's got like a USB-C on one side. The Lightning is way thinner than USB-C.
Yep. Yes, absolutely.
It's like a little slit.
But
and the
problem
USB-C
there
is
that no one else can make USB-C, or sorry, no one else can make Lightning peripherals without paying into, you know, Apple's coffers, right?
No,
and so
true.
I think people are willing to swallow that on the phone and the iPad, but I don't think people are willing to swallow that necessarily on the Mac.
Doesn't seem like a super Mac-like thing to do.
Yeah, so at least to do it to the exclusion of USB-C. I mean, I guess they could put both on, but that also seems odd.
But I
people
think
are
going
to plug the wrong thing into different things, right? Like,
I would say it's more likely that the MacBook gains a second USB-C port than gains a Lightning port.
I would agree with that.
Just use your wireless headphones on your Mac, or in reality, you know, this is the case now already with the one port MacBook. It's like, or get a docking connector, get some sort of functional connector that lets you add stuff, because you can add Ethernet and, you know, you name
it. You can route all that over
MacBook
USB-C.
through a hub. In fact, my iMac here at my desk, because I bought it before I had the iMac, when I was just using the MacBook Air and an external monitor, I've got one of those Thunderbolt docks on. It's Velcroed to the bottom of my desk or the side of my desk. And that's where I get USB and Ethernet and, you know, all of my peripheral stuff is actually going through the dock, not off the back of my iMac. And that's for both. Basically, it's for cord reasons to make my desktop cleaner. But that's with any of these low port devices. That's the end result. That's the final solution for fixing this problem, is get a breakout box. Now, you know, yeah, if you're traveling, that stinks, because now you have to carry a breakout box with you. But I don't know. I feel like that's the answer for a lot of this stuff. If you've got, because what I was going to say is, like, if you've got external speakers that you want to plug in when you're working at your desk with your MacBook, the answer may be you plug in a thing via USB-C that has audio out on it, and you do that, and that's just how it has to be.
I'm
or
just
use
curious.
Wireless.
I was reaching behind my iMac here to see how much stuff I actually have plugged in. And I think the answer is not that much. I mean, like, obviously I'm on a USB microphone right now. But a lot of the other stuff that's plugged into my iMac is kind of like, it's there for utility's sake, but not something that it needs. Like, I have a Lightning cable plugged in because I often plug my phone in when I'm at my desk, but like, I don't need that there. I have like a weird Ethernet bridging thing set up for a VoIP line, which I also don't really need. Like, I mean, somebody made the comment that they thought Bluetooth headphones would be as common as like Bluetooth keyboards and trackpads in a few years. And, you know, part of me felt like, well, I mean, I could see that. It's certainly plausible. I'm not sure it'll happen, but I think it's plausible. Just because I think there are strong arguments to be made in favor of wireless headphones. I mean, you mentioned on Twitter the knobs on your kitchen, and, you know, having been in similar situation, I've definitely run into that. But for me, it was going to the gym. I would be up on the elliptical machine, and I would hit the cord with my arm, and my phone would fly off, right? And I'm like, after the second or third time, you're like, this is ridiculous. Why am I doing this? So I bought a pair of $20 Bluetooth headphones, and you know what? They're not fantastic headphones, but they're fine. They're fine for going to the gym. And so I guess the big question for me is what I'm going to do for sort of my daily, because I have a decent pair of portable, you know, headphones that I sort of are my daily wear headphones. I think for the moment, you know, if I'm upgrading to the iPhone 7, which I'm increasingly leaning towards, I will probably just stick with the adapter unless it turns out to be a huge pain.
I only am really using wired headphones on my iPhone on planes or in the car, and for those situations, can I get by with an adapter? Sure, I can. I only have, by the way, the only things running out of my my iMac are power and Thunderbolt to that dock. That's it. I do occasionally plug in like a dock connector or something like that. But even this microphone and my USB keyboard, those are actually going through the USB hub in the dock. So I'm cheating, but
I really used to distrust docks a lot. I ran into some bad ones.
Yeah, I know. This one has served me well so far, and it means that there aren't five cables running out the back of my iMac. Yeah. And instead, there are two. And
to your point about wired headphones, I mean, I wear mine a lot when I'm walking around town. So I walk to the coffee shop, or I go to visit someone in town, or I need to ride the subway somewhere to like my dentist or whatever. You know, like I bring my little wired headphones with me because they're not huge or whatever. And so the question is, well, I don't really want to use my gym headphones as my daily headphones because I honestly, again, I don't think they're great. Like they're kind of quiet in a lot of ways and they're not super, they're fine, but they're not like daily wear headphones. I know that I'm sacrificing something when I take them to the gym instead of like my nice headphones.
Right.
And I was looking into maybe because I've got some potentially long plane trips coming up later this year, getting some noise canceling, a pair of the Bose just came out with a Bluetooth version of their really nice over-the-ear noise-canceling headphones, which I think got pretty good reviews from The Verge and elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So I was looking into possibly that, and I figured I had originally been looking into the wired version, and then I saw they came out with the Bluetooth version and that everybody seems to like, and thought, well, okay, maybe that's the direction I should go then. I don't know if I'll wear those all the time because I don't think those are, again, headphones I necessarily want to wear, like, walking down the street.
Right.
But for a plane, absolutely. Like, that seems like a great option.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. I mean, there are a lot of places where wireless headphones, definitely have advantages. My Bluetooth earbuds are pretty good. I usually use them for podcasts when I'm running or in the kitchen. They're great for that. I mean, in fact, when I'm cooking in the kitchen, the dog thinks I'm going to take it for a walk because I put them in and she's like, oh, this is good. This is a good sign. We're going to go for a walk. And I'm like, no, it's not actually what I'm using for this time, dog. But I use them mostly for podcasts. And when I listen to music on them, I'm not impressed with it. In-ear monitors that I've got, the in-ear headphones that I've got, even the cheaper Edemotic ones are way better. And the Ultimate Ears that I've got are way, 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 way better. And that's the problem that I've got. That's the concern I've got in this whole transition is I'm not sure whether like high quality headphones are going to make the jump, especially since Bluetooth audio is re-encoded to be streamed, right? Even right. like the AirPods will use AAC. Although what's funny is a lot of the good Bluetooth headphones use a codec that Apple doesn't support. So when you pair them with an iPhone, the quality is way worse than it is if you pair it with an Android phone. But the AirPods at least use the AAC stream, but still it's a re-encoded in order to stream it. And for people who are very sensitive to audio quality, that's an issue too. So I'm not sure whether I'm one of those people or not, but I certainly am somebody who has listened to good headphones enough, these in-ear headphones, that I don't want to go back to lower quality. And I feel like that might mean that when I want to listen to those headphones, I got to have a wire and an adapter, and that they're, you know, I'm skeptical about whether they'll ever come up with something for, you know, something wireless that fits that area. Although who knows? I mean, the AirPods are kind of there in terms of everything except the quality is probably kind of mediocre. But I mean, the AirPods, I don't know. I've never loved Apple's headphones.
Oh, yeah, me neither. And I mean, I've ended up giving a number of pairs to my girlfriend because she
keeps
breaking
them. Right? I give them away to people too. And it's just like, I mean, most people don't care. My kids don't care.
Well, which is where the Lightning earpods, I think, are going to be a huge hit, right? Because if people are just buying the new phone, they're getting new earpods, and they're probably, most of people are probably going to use that. Granted, there's a vocal minority of people who are not going to use it, and that includes me because I don't use them either. But, you know, for a lot of people, for the vast majority, it's probably not going to make that much of a difference. So I think it's interesting. I'll be interested to see how it's received. So are you making the jump to an iPhone 7, are you thinking?
I'm on the fence about it, honestly, because I'm not sure what the benefits are that I would take advantage of. It's nice to get a new phone. I actually could get one now. I'm at the end of a 2-year cycle, but I don't know. I haven't decided yet. I suppose since they're going to take orders tonight, right?
Time to figure that out.
That I'm going to have to figure that one out.
I mean, you could wait. I mean, they often have them a week or something later,
that's
right?
My gut feeling, well, the only question is, am I going to get review units? Because the advantage of getting them immediately upon arrival day is that I can also use them and review them. And if Apple's not going to give me ones on loan to review, then that's the only way I'm going to be able to write about that product is by having one. So I guess that's one of the reasons I'm on the fence is I don't know whether I'm going to have the Apple units or not. I need to talk to Apple about it because I'm not one of the people who got the fancy briefing after the event where they give you the new phones and say, here, try these out and let us know what you think. But I sometimes am in another wave who gets a briefing, you know, a day or two before they come out or a day or two after.
Right. Yeah. Well, unfortunately not having had the virtue of seeing them in person this year for me is made that, a little bit trickier. Because in general, though, I know what an iPhone looks like. They do have those, new colors and new finishes. And I was trying to make decisions there. I mean, for me, the upgrading thing, like you said, having it available and being able to write about it is obviously, a big option. For me, I was doing the math and thinking about this, and I mentioned this on Clockwise this week, but, I signed up for the iPhone upgrade program last year. And so I'm in the position where I can just trade in my 6S and get a 7. And it's basically to get the mid-range one, which is now 128, which is pretty cool. I basically end up paying the same monthly amount. So thinking about it, I was like, well, I can pay the exact same amount and get a new phone. And if I'm sitting here paying the same amount for an old phone, then in fact, my value should be better if I trade it in and get the new phone and continue paying the same monthly fee, right? Mm-hmm. So I guess looking at it for me that way was thinking like, well, it's actually not that much in terms, it's not really an additional expenditure for me now. It's just sort of a straight swap.
Well, if you, right, I suppose that's true. I was going to say, or the other way to go is to, can you keep it and stop paying? I think you can't.
I can't stop paying. That's called theft. But I can pay I can pay off what I owe. So basically, I've paid 1 year's worth of payments.
Right. And the way the Apple plan works is essentially you agree to pay 2 years' worth, but after 1 year, you can give it back and get the new one.
Exactly, and sort of just forego the swap payments, right? Instead of paying off the second year of the old phone, I'm paying off the first year of the new phone.
Right, so the value of the old phone is essentially half.
Right.
The part you haven't paid.
Yes, exactly. But that's just sort of getting lumped into next year's. Like, basically, I'm good until I want to, get off the plan. It's a great merry-go-round to be on until you want to get off of it.
Yeah, although then you buy it out, and then you've got the phone.
Right, exactly, which I can do basically at any time, presumably because it's a loan. And so, for me, the 6S has been fine. Mine's always been a little janky. I feel like, especially in the last several months, my battery just dies super fast. Hmm. So I'm kind of okay with switching to something that, in theory, has a better battery on it. Even if that just meant, if I had not upgraded, I was thinking about going in and under Apple Care just saying, hey, I think my battery's kind of shot, and seeing if they would give me a new one. But I figure if I'm going to do that, I might as well get a new phone, and we'll see if the headphone jack thing really ends up being a huge problem or not.
It sounds like I was doing the math, and it's very, the way Apple's done it is pretty clever. Basically, if I take the cost of the 128 iPhone 7 and add in the cost of Apple Care and divide it by 24, I get exactly what the monthly fee is for the iPhone upgrade program. So basically what it's saying is, look, if you want Apple Care Plus and want an iPhone 7 128, and you are planning on getting another iPhone in a year, there's no difference in
exactly,
in price between these two, or actually in 2 years, because it's the equivalent, and what you're giving back is after a year you're giving the phone back, and
right, exactly,
and
so I,
the rest of it.
I have no collateral. Yeah, it's kind of it's a lease, right? Like a sort of essentially like leasing
basically
a car. And so, that's not something that ever really appealed to me as far as cars go. But, for this, in this particular case, it does mean it's very easy for me to keep up to date with a new phone every year, which I can then write about.
Right.
Rather than for
the cost, essentially, of buying a new phone unlocked every 2 years.
Correct. Yeah. So
yeah. How about that?
I feel like I might be a fool not to upgrade. But
and again, for me, and this is weird because it's the business that we're in, what I probably would actually want to do is buy it outright, because depending on whether I have a review unit, and when Apple wants those review units back really varies widely. But I like to have old phones around. I have a drawer with old phones in them, and I have them there so that I can like run benchmark stuff and say, this is faster than this, right? And how can I say that the 6 is this fast and the 7 is this fast and the 6S is this fast if I don't have those systems anymore? Because the OS has changed, the software, the benchmarking software has changed. And I mean, it's not like a super vitally important part of what I do, but it is part of what I do. And I'm reluctant to give that up and say, I just don't have, like when you were here for WWDC, you actually have a phone that I gave you to use to test iOS 10 beta.
Yep.
Because you didn't have a phone to test it on, right? And yep. That's the value of having these phones kicking around, is even though, yeah, there's a cost to it. So that's the other thing, which, again, almost nobody has this issue, but I have this issue. So that's part of my thing too, is maybe I should just go ahead and buy the phone so that I have it free and clear and can keep it in a drawer when I'm done with it, so that in 3 years, when I need to compare the performance of the iPhone 7 to the iPhone 8 and 8S, I have one instead of having given it back to Apple 2 years before.
And the short answer is I rely upon you for those benchmarks.
Yeah. All right.
I mean, but for me, I mean, you know, especially for me as a freelancer, being able to factor in a monthly cost that is the same and is lower than buying a phone outright also has its advantages.
Yeah.
Because for me, it ends up being just sort of like another expense, like paying my, you know, my utility bills.
Yeah, and it's a fixed expense, which
is rather
nice.
Than dropping, you know, $700. That's no small thing, in one lump.
To put it in perspective, the investment in a new iPhone for use as a reference system for 6 colors is the equivalent of 12 annual subscriptions to 6 colors. So if I buy this phone, that is essentially 12 people saying, "Hey, hey, Jason, here, yeah, get the phone because we want you to test that." But again, I don't know. I think undoubtedly I will have one. And I the question really is more, like I said, can I get away for a month or two? Like, usually what will happen is if I can get an Apple loaner, I'll just get that. And then I'll wait for the crowds to lie down.
Lie down, crowds.
Get on the ground, crowds. I wait for the crowds to die down and the back orders to be done. And then I'll get mine that I own in a little bit. That's very convenient, but and then I've used the phones, so I know exactly what I want to buy, which is a really nice bonus.
But if you get a loaner, they don't let you choose your color, right?
Well, you know, they ask.
Okay.
And I get excited sometimes. Like, they asked about the iPad. I think it was the iPad Pro 12.9. They asked, or maybe it was the iPhone 6S last year, and I said, "Oh, well, you know, I had this one, and but I really like this color." And they're like, yeah, so that sounds good. I think what I said was like, "You should give me a rose gold because the photography is good." And they're like, "All right." And then I got a space gray one. I'm like, "Okay, that's that. All right."
So they ask. They may not respect it.
They do ask, because they also ask your carrier, because what they want you to be able to do is pop your SIM card into it and just have it work. So they'll say AT&T, and they'll send me an AT&T phone. Although another tidbit, this is great. Subscribers get to hear all this stuff. All the Apple phones, for years now, that the review units are all unlocked.
Yeah.
Which was fun. I was using my phone, which was locked on AT&T, on a international trip, but I had brought another phone with me that was an Apple loaner, and I put my SIM card I put the prepaid SIM card that I got into it, and it totally worked. And I was like, yes, it was great.
Yeah. That is one of the best things, I think, also about when I made the jump to the upgrade program last year, was that all the phones are unlocked.
They're all unlocked. It's
carrier independent too, right? Yeah. Like, I felt like, well, why should I pay my carrier all this money?
Yeah.
You know, to have their deals when I could just sort of divorce them from the process. So I'm about to be out of my 2-year contract for probably the last time, which is actually pretty exciting, because now the way AT&T is structured stuff, my bill goes down. So that's a nice change for me.
That's going to be good, right? Because you're paying that money to Apple, essentially, and not to AT&T.
Right, and they're still paying off the subsidy on a... In fact, I'm still essentially like paying off the subsidy on a phone that I don't have anymore.
Yeah.
That's not entirely true. I gave that phone to my dad, so my dad has that all phone. Right. But yeah.
Yep.
All right. So phones, other than figuring out the color, which I was sort of on the fence between the jet black and the matte black, having not seen them in person, and I won't probably get to see them in person until I actually go in to trade my phone in. So that's I guess I just have to sort of take a shot there. But I will not upgrade my watch. I feel like I'm pretty comfortable with what I've got. Though I am intrigued. We talked a little bit about the upgrading the old watch, which now has the new internals. Which I think is a fascinating choice because remember back when before the watch came out, we all were talking about like, do you think they'll let you take the watch in and upgrade, just swap out the processor? And we all, I think, decided, no, that's ridiculous. They'll never do that. But essentially, that's what they just did that just en masse.
if they could have like a little tool and for $150 or whatever, they just go boop, boop. And now you've got the new internal little processor module. Wouldn't that be nice? But I don't think the Apple Watch works like that. I was
intrigued to see. I think the first person I saw tweeting it was our old colleague Rob Griffiths, that the cases are actually, the chassis of the new Series 2 watches are actually slightly different than the chassis of last year's watches in size.
Yeah, well, they're thicker. It's a millimeter thicker. So this is not a product that I thought could really stand to get thicker. Honestly.
And they're heavier too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're trying to, you know, this is the trick.
More stuff in.
They're trying to cram a lot of stuff in there and advance the functionality. And
thank God they took out the headphone jack now.
Yeah. Really. Imagine what would be the case if you had the, because everybody wants to run with the headphones dangling.
Yeah. It's very comfy.
The watch. Yeah. Yeah. It's a weird situation. I had a guy on Twitter today who was really trying to explain to me why, well, you know, there's value in Apple using this new process because it makes the Series 1 a better device than the original Apple Watch and all that. And it's like, yeah, I get it. I totally get why they might do it. But it does go against their recent policy of letting the old tech stay on the product line. Your margins are now pretty good on the old tech, and so you can cut its price and still make some pretty good money on it, and then you bring in the new ones. And what they did with the Apple Watch is upgraded it and still cut its price, and that's a little surprising. I see why they might want to do it. It clears an old processor type out of the channel faster, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there are a lot of Apple Watch originals now, but it means that in a couple of years, they're going to be that much further removed from the last Apple Watch that had the original processor.
Does it seem like a tacit admission that the S1 just wasn't cutting it?
Could be, or it could just be that hardware was designed so long ago now that somebody made the case of like, look, let's just slipstream in this new processor. It's not going to cost us much to slipstream it in. We can still cut the price and make our margins. It makes it a better product because, you know, the Apple Watch was announced 2 years ago. So that hardware, they've been working on the software and stuff, but that hardware has probably been locked down for a long time. So it was, you know, I think it is perfectly fine on watchOS 3.
Yeah, sure.
They're probably imagining like down the road where they're going with this and I keep coming back to the iPad 2. They sold that iPad 2 for so long.
Right.
And imagine if at some point they had just slipstreamed into the same product at the same price point, but it was suddenly a slightly more modern processor in there, and it would change the calculation for all the developers who had people using brand new iPads that had that old processor in them. And and you know, maybe that's one of the things that's going on here, I guess.
Yeah, I it's interesting, and I'm curious to see where it goes in the future if they revert back to, you know, doing, as you said, keeping the old hardware on sale, or if this becomes sort of the new de facto standard for the Apple Watch. So when Series 3 comes out, we get Series 2 with an S3 in it or whatever.
Right. What they're doing is they're differentiating these products based on functionality like the GPS and the waterproofing rather than on... I mean, they already didn't differentiate on like speeds and feeds and stuff. That was never a thing that the Apple has done on most of its products, its consumer non-computery products. But this is a case where it's like if we change, if all we do is change the processor so that it's a dual core faster processor, but otherwise it remains the same, as far as we're concerned, it's the same.
Yeah.
But right. if we change it so that it's waterproof and it's got a nifty speaker that ejects the water by vibrating it out, and it's got GPS functionality that wasn't there before, that's what makes it new. And I think that's kind of interesting that a faster processor to them, it's like it might as well not have changed.
Right, right. It's a it's a featureful thing. It's right. It's about what you're doing with it, not about how fast it is. And I think that's that tends to be a very Apple way, I feel like, to address products in many cases.
Yeah. Well, I feel, not to pat myself on the back here, but I feel like I sort of called this one. I got the timing wrong, but when we were talking about 2 years ago when the Apple Watch was launching, and a year and a half ago when it shipped, what happens, you know, never one to not look as far ahead as possible. We started to talk about what happens when they do a new version. Is this going to be every year? How long is it going to be? And I remember very clearly thinking and saying, what if they took this and kept everything the same and just slipped in a faster processor and said, yeah, it's faster now, and just kept selling it? Because why not just do that? And they did, that's totally what they did, which I, you know, again, they did it as a part of launching a new model that's still compatible and looks like the old one, which I think is really good because it makes people feel like there's some stability in this Apple Watch thing. It's not going to be this everything breaks every year kind of thing that people feared originally. But yeah, you know, Apple Watch Series 3 will come out in a year or two with cellular data support, plus GPS, plus who knows what else, mind reading. And who's to say that the Series 2 at that point won't get the upgraded processor, you know, system on a chip, but none of those features. And that'll be that what defines Series 2 is GPS and waterproofing.
Right. Capabilities.
That's it.
And rather than just like a speeds thing. I think
and the 1,000 nits screen and, you know, those things.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's plausible to me, and I think what will be interesting will be, first of all, I think the Series 3, I think they're looking at a year and a half to 2 years for their cycle.
I think so.
I don't, because, you know, and we talked about this a lot before it came out, too. Like, are you going to be buying a new watch every year? And I think the answer is no. I might even be buying a watch every new 3 or 4 years, right? Like, you know, the Series 3 might come out and may look the same or similar enough. Or they might slim it down a little bit, right? I think it's going to be fewer and farther between as far as updates go.
Right, and that's also why I think the Series 2 is not for, unless you're a swimmer, and we said this on Clockwise too, it's not for people who have an Apple Watch now. Unless you very specifically need GPS or swimming features, it's for the people who are going to buy an Apple Watch for the first time in the next 2 years. That's what this is for. Apple really does not expect that people are going to buy a new Apple Watch every 2 years. It's not realistic.
Well,
it's not what the product's for.
And it's interesting also to see how they've pivoted the entire line in some way. I mean, so gone is the Apple Watch Sport no longer exists as a concept, right? There is an aluminum watch, but that's kind of the de facto watch. And then there's like, it comes in aluminum or stainless steel, but it's both, they're both just called the Apple Watch. It's just a different material for cases.
Right. And then there's the Nike.
Yeah. Which is a little weird, I guess, just has like a custom. So I guess the Hermes one, which is also a separate SKU type thing and has been out there for a little while and has like a different watch face on it.
Yeah.
It seems like the Nike is kind of in line with that, where it's like, this is a brand deal that we've made.
It's got its own bands and its own custom watch faces.
Is it just watch faces, or does it actually have different software? That's what I was trying to determine.
I believe what I heard was, and not from Apple, just sort of through the grapevine, is that the Nike app stuff is just watch apps that you can install. So you can have any Apple Watch and install a Nike watch app, apparently. But for the custom Nike face and the Nike band and all of that, that's what you get when you buy the Nike, which means it's just like the Hermes
watch. It's just a different direction, right? Sports instead of fashion, which is smart. I would not be surprised to see some more deals in that line going forward, just because it lets them address different portions of the market. It also explains to a certain degree why they haven't opened up watch faces to third-party developers, because if they're turning that into, you know, sort of a profitable enterprise, then, you know, it behooves them not to dilute it.
This kind of co-branding thing that they're doing. I think that Nike thing, by the way, and I'm by no means a running expert. I run and hate it, but I do it. But I'll tell you, I think the Nike thing is brilliant because mm-hmm. Nike as a brand means so much to runners. Not all runners, but it is a powerful brand for athletes in general, for runners in particular. And the success that Nike has had in terms of its branding, reaching that audience is remarkable. So now you've got Apple reaching people that maybe the Apple brand didn't reach before, but the Nike brand will reach them.
Right.
They're loyal exactly. to Nike, and they see this, and essentially Nike saying, this is our solution for you. It is not a Fitbit. It is the Apple Watch Nike edition, Nike Plus edition. This is what you should get and use it to run.
And Tim sits on the Nike board, I believe.
I think so, yeah.
And so, I mean, but I agree. And I think that that's what's interesting about that and the Hermes deal is that there are definitely are other brands in other spheres that have that kind of resonance with their customers, right? With that intense loyalty, which is similar to what Apple has with its customers. But there's not always, like, in the Venn diagram, right? The overlap isn't always huge. And so addressing runners with Nike seems really smart. Addressing sort of people who are very fashion conscious with the Hermes stuff seems very smart. I would not at all be surprised to see them pick up a couple other, you know, brands that have extreme loyalty, you know, in one sphere or the other, and try to figure out a way to do sort of more co-branding with them. I think that's entirely plausible to me.
Yeah.
I'm also interested in the so the edition has changed. Instead of having all these fancy metal, you know, gold, you know, better the gold than gold. the good old better gold. We now have a ceramic white case, which I hear is very attractive, but it's also a fraction of the cost of those first edition ones, which makes you wonder if you bought one of those $10,000 edition watches, do you feel kind of like, oh, well, it's a nice, you know, eventually that's a nice paperweight, right?
Well, I mean, that was always the way though, right?
Yeah, I think it didn't. It's and obviously, like we were just saying, it still works fine now. And I'm also going to guess that anybody who bought one of those can probably afford it.
Can probably afford it. But it's certainly a collector's item now, if nothing else.
Sure, absolutely.
I mean, so what they did was the watch edition is now the ceramic model, and it's $1,299. So that $10,000 gold watch is gone, gone, gone.
Yep. Yeah, it's an interesting choice because I think we all had very specific. It connoted something when they announced it and they talked about these ridiculously, you know, expensive watches. And I think what they've sort of reeled it back in, right? Because, you know, the ceramic, even at $1,249 or whatever, is a tenth of the price of most of the edition watches. So they're approaching sort of a higher end market, but not like a luxury ultra high end market anymore. And I think that's probably smart. And certainly they've refocused in the presentation, they reined it in a lot and talked about fitness mostly. So, you know, focusing around that also makes a lot of sense. The messaging was much better this time around, on the watch is my opinion. I feel like they did a much better job. They didn't belabor it. They spent just enough time as they needed to. And it was really all about fitness in some way, whether it be hikes, swimming, running, Pokemon, even it was fitness oriented, right?
Like, what's it for? It's for fitness. Now it'll do other things too, but if they have to pick a focus, what's it for? It's for fitness. So much more focus than they had on 2 years ago, right?
Yep, 100%. And it's smart because it's also just that, like, you know, it'll do all those things, like you said, it'll do all those things too. But then none of those are all stuff you can do on your phone. And at this point, you know, the fitness features are the ones that are, you know, most unique to the watch, because it is something you are wearing, right? It does things the phone can't do easily. So that's smart as a differentiator rather than the, we're going to duplicate all the features of your phone, except on an interface that's probably not quite as good. And it doesn't have like its own data connection. So you still need a phone.
Yep. Well, it happened. We did it. We got through another Apple event.
Well, we'll do it again.
Yeah, it hopefully, yeah, hopefully there'll be a Mac related something next month. That would be nice, right?
Yeah, I'm still looking forward to seeing that new MacBook Pro, which seems like it's got to be coming before the holidays, I would think, but who knows?
I don't know. Who knows at this point? It's a mystery. All right, well, I'm going to go to Portland to XOXO for the weekend, which is sort of like become completely tied in. I don't know. They're not going to do it next year. I don't know what I'm going to do with my post iPhone event weekend. That's where I've gone the last like 4 years or something is to that or last three years, I guess. Yeah. So that's pretty funny, but I'm doing it again one more time before the end. So, but I'll be back in the saddle again next week. Keep the lights on for me while I'm gone, Dan.
Sure. Yeah, I just have a 2-day bachelor party to go to.
Oh yeah, that's right. Because you're doing a podcast in the middle of a bachelor party.
I am not from the bachelor party,
but I'll take
a break from the bachelor party to do a game show this weekend.
Nice.
Just
all right.
As soon as I finish writing.
Well, have a good weekend
and have a good trip to XOXO.
Thank you, and we'll check in with everybody next week. All right. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.